Well, good morning. We are small, but we are mighty.
Yes, we are.
Glad you guys are here. We're going to spend a little time talking about blended family living. And yeah, woo, right? So I know this is sort of weird. Believe it or not, I mean, we put a sign and a description on this workshop, but sometimes people come and they really don't belong here. So I really need your help. I'm going to give you guys a little bit of a test. Welcome. Glad you guys are here. Come on in. Grab a seat. We've just begun. We're going to do a little assessment to make sure you belong here, okay? Because sometimes people wander in and they really shouldn't be here. So I'm going to give you a little, in the spirit of Jeff Foxworthy and David Letterman, I'm going to give you my top 10 list of ways that you know you're a step family, okay? So if you could say yes to any of these, then you belong here. And if you say no to any of these, go away. So here's what I need you to do. I need you to be my chorus. I'll read the list. You be the chorus. So I need you to say you might be a stepfamily. One, two, three. Let's practice.
You might be a stepfamily.
One more time. One, two, three.
You might be a stepfamily.
Okay, number 10. If you had your rehearsal dinner at Chuck E. Cheese, you might be a stepfamily. Number 9. If your honeymoon was at Legoland, you might be a stepfamily. Number 8. If you got his and her car seats as a wedding gift, you might be a stepfamily. Number 7, if you have Thanksgiving dinner at 4 different homes. Good, don't drop the ball, folks. Number 5, if your family tree, and this is number 6, I'm losing count. Number 6, if your family tree looks like a shotgun blast, you might be a stepfamily. Number 5, if the age span of your children is 2 decades or greater, you might be. Number 4, if your new marriage comes with built-in grandchildren. Number 3, when you post your marital status online, if you post it as often, you might be a stepfamily. Number 2, if you cannot remember all of your kids' last names, and the number 1 way to know that you might be a stepfamily is if you have ever in your life been slapped in the face.
Hi. Aw, thank you. Have a seat. Kyle, Jalen. Jalen, Kyle.
Jalen, you play nice.
I'll be right back.
What's going on, little man? I see you got your game skills down, Pack. You might have your hands full once. I'll pick up the controller, little man.
Put it back. Keep your hands on my mama. Keep your hands on my Doritos.
Jalen, are you playing nice?
Okay, this brother right here was quoting the lines as they were coming along. You have seen that before. That was a Super Bowl commercial years ago, immediately went viral. Keep your hands off my mama. Keep your hands off my Doritos. Now, what just happened in that little scene? This guy walks in. He's like, hey, I'm going to sweep this woman off her feet. This is going to be an amazing experience. She doesn't know how the good that's coming her way, right? And here's this little man. Let me engage him. We're playing video games. We're eating Doritos. And all of a sudden, this kid puts a stop to the whole thing. Keep your hands off my mama. Keep your hands off my Doritos. He is staking out his territory and making it very clear, I belong here. My mama belongs here. The Doritos belong here. You do not belong here. Now, let's just think about that for a minute. Something weird is going on. Some dynamic is upside down, and the future stepdad came in not knowing that the rules were different. This is how you get a slap in the face. These are the moments where life wakes you up to something is different here. Now, my guess is we could go around the room and every one of you could go, oh, I can tell you the first slap. I remember that moment clearly. And you could probably tell me the last one that you got where you were sort of just reminded there's something different here. There's an old phrase. The best thing a father can do for his children is to love their mother. You ever heard that? It's actually very profound. It captures the heart of how family systems work. That the relationships between mom and dad has everything to do with the relationship between parents and children and child development and a child's inner sense of identity and worth and value. All of that is tied to not just how dad treats him, but how dad treats mom and mom treats dad, that the whole thing works together in unison. Now, that is true in biological family systems. The way marriage was designed to be, husband and wife come together, then have children. When children flow out of the marriage, the best thing a father can do for his children is to love their mother. But according to that little video, if we take that as gospel, which I don't know that we should, but if we did and we just said, okay, here's a little case study, let's ask the question, is the best thing a stepfather or stepparent, or in this case, a future stepfather, is the best thing a stepfather can do for his stepson is to love the child's mother? Well, to the child, apparently not, at least not in the beginning, because to the kid, there is a place, a territory where I belong and she belongs and we are together, we're connected, and that does not include you. And if you step into this territory, then now all of a sudden I have to share my mom with you. That is a loss for me. There's a sadness in this. And in this child, it came out as anger, territorialism, walls that are put up. Keep your hands off my mama. Keep your hands off my Doritos. Now, if we went around the room and I asked you, have you ever seen those walls? Have you ever seen the territorialism? Have you ever, as a step-parent, felt like you were on the outside, desperately trying to get on the inside, and somebody sort of said, you don't belong here? But there was another person in that territory, the wife, who says, you do belong here. The biological parent invites you into that space, and it makes sense, and you want to be ushered in, and yet, at the same time, you're sort of feeling like, I belong here, and I don't belong here. I'm not really sure, what do I do with that? See, that's what's a little topsy-turvy when you think about blended family living, is that there's some rules that are different, that it's actually a little more complex than you would realize. Some of you have seen this little video we put together at Family Life Blended to just sort of remind people of a narrative and to illustrate one example of what happens when various parts of families come together over time. Here you go.
Our story begins when this guy met this girl and fell madly in love. First came love, then came marriage. Then came Emily, Michael, and John in a baby carriage. They were living the dream until doubt and isolation tore love apart. One love and one home became two. In another part of the world, a loving marriage welcomed two beautiful children. Life and love for this couple went along as they hoped, and they too were living the dream, until mom became ill. Bad became worse, and worse ended the dream. Courageously, dad strove to pick up the pieces and help his grieving children carry on. And together, they did. Until one day when this lady met this fellow. Wait, where have I heard that before? Oh well. One thing led to another, and a new dream for a new home was born. Yes, they knew there would be challenges merging homes, extended families, parenting strategies, finances, loss experiences, and holiday traditions, but they were confident that love would see them through. With hearts full of hope, they married. In the meantime, this guy, remember him? Announced that he and his girlfriend were getting married. They too had a dream for a new home. Okay, let's recap, shall we? What started out as two simple homes with four parents and five kids became three homes with three parents and five kids. And then became two homes with two parents, two step-parents, five children, five stepchildren, and the living memory of a deceased mother. And five sets of grandparents, dozens of cousins, uncles, and aunts, colliding family traditions, kids with divided loyalties, a home with five children on some days and only two the next, two bedtimes, differing parenting styles, conflict between homes, debt from the past, questions about whether this marriage will last, and four adults who quickly realize that their simple dream to recreate their dream home has instead created a multi-household family that is not simple at all, but complex. Love and hope has brought these families together, but how do they manage the complexity? And how do they make the dream reality? To find help, this home went to their local church. To their surprise, they found a ministry to blended families just like theirs. They weren't alone. With the help of Family Life Blended and their local church, this home found answers to the questions stepfamilies ask. For most, becoming a healthy stepfamily has its challenges. Becoming stepfamily smart is the first step toward helping this home and others like it live the dream. Live your dream. Family Life Blended, strengthening stepfamilies.
Okay, so that introduces it to the ministry that I run called Family Life Blended. It's part of Family Life, a large marriage and family organization that's now based in Orlando, Florida. It used to be based in Little Rock, Arkansas for about 45 years. I still live in Little Rock, and as does the Blended team, except for a couple of people that are scattered around the country. Like, we got a couple right up here that live right here in Dallas and go to this church. I'll introduce you to them here in a little bit. They're a part of our team that is out in the field. And that's what we do day in and day out, is help blended families and help churches understand blended families. Now, there's a line in there where we're showing the complexity. The simple dream all of a sudden gets a little more complicated. And when those complexities hit, then that begins to change. Expectations are not met and disappointment comes. And how do we do with this? And how do we handle that? And it says, love and hope has brought these people together. That's true. That's why you get married. Hope, love. Whatever the past was, we're moving past that. We're moving forward. We're walking in God's grace. There's hope for a new life, a new vision, new marriage, new relationship. Love and hope has brought them together. But how do they manage the complexity? You see, here's the deal. Complexity brings stress. In the experience of day in and day out, how do we do life? How do we work together as a team, husband and wife? What's my role? Okay, so I'm a stepdad. I came in. I just thought it'd be simple. But then keep your hands off my mom. Keep your hands off my Doritos. What do I do with that slap in the face? How do I manage that moment? What does that mean for my relationship with this child? What does it mean for my relationship with his mother? The complexity creates stress. And when stress rises, it has this interesting effect. Now think about the word blended family. You're trying to merge. You're trying to come together. You're trying to bring together people and create a family identity. But stress, I should say, thickens blood, which is another way of saying it sort of creates mechanisms that pull in the opposite direction, that pull away from familyness. So you have these forces where you're hoping and merging and trying to move people forward. And at the same time, there's something that's sort of drawing them back away from one another. And ultimately, that puts a stress on marriage. Because the marriage is what starts it, and then you bring everybody else along. And who's the everybody? Well, sometimes it's kids. Sometimes it's a former mother-in-law who's still grandmother to children. Maybe it's former spouse. If it's a deceased spouse, then it's still the memory of who that parent was, who they would be in the child's life as they grow and develop over time. That's all a living memory in this home. So you bring all of that together and you're trying to merge it, but the stress can work against that familyness, and ultimately it works against coupleness. If you pinned me down and said, what's the key reason couples in blended families have a little higher divorce rate than couples in first marriages, it would be stress. It would be complexity. How do we manage this, that thing, slap in the face, keep your hands off my mama, keep your hands off my Doritos? And so as we talk a little bit today, this morning, part one, and then this afternoon, part two, feel free to come if you want to come back to that session. It's very different than what we're doing here. I want us to talk about stress. I want us to talk about complexity. And how do you manage that? How do you make sense of it? How do you be in charge of it? Because at the end of the day, you as husband and wife have to lead your family through the stress. You have to lead through the managing the process of becoming family. That's not only for kids and the family as a unit. It is very much for your marriage because those things are intimately tied together. So let's just walk through a few things. On your handout, you got a little place for some boxes. Why don't you, let's fill in. I just want to show you a process to have you maybe make sense. By the way, I don't know where you are in your journey. You could be, 1 month in, you could be 10 years in or 20 years in. This will either help inform where you're headed. It might also give a perspective about where you've been, help you pull some pieces together and say, how do we move forward? So let's talk a little bit about protecting your marriage. So the journey is something like this. In a first marriage, an individual married another individual and they became a couple. Now, I realize lots of people today just don't marry, but they maybe have children. They've coupled together. They live together, and then they have children. kids still follow coupleness. In the marital design, as God has laid out, which is what we're looking at, right? This is Genesis 2. Man meets woman, they become couple, then they have children. There's actually some advantages built into that family structure. What do I mean by advantages? I mean emotional, psychological, and spiritual advantages. So, for example, children come second. A kid doesn't say, keep your hands off my mama. Because a child born in this scenario is thrilled when dad loves mama. He is not challenged by this man loving his mother. He finds security and safety in his father loving mom. That's a completely different experience for children. Let me just say that again. And a first family model like we're looking at here, when mom and dad are happily married, when they go out and spend time together, when they hold hands in the car, there is not to a child a competition going on. There is no competition. It is to the child's benefit that mom and dad are holding hands. But in a blended family situation, we'll see in a minute, keep your hands off my mama. Wait a minute, that's my hand to hold. I don't think you belong here. At least that's maybe the child's point of view. By the way, not all kids feel this way. None of them take that posture. Some of them are more than welcoming. Sometimes within a sibling group, you have two that are happy and one that's sort of like, I don't know how I feel about this. That's a pretty common thing as well. But it has to do with structure. So child development is supported as well as the marriage is supported. When I say child development is supported, again, safety, security of mom and dad being the foundation of our home. If you thought of it as, here's the cement slab, and now we can put on the walls and the roof of the house. Parenting, marriage, familyness, all flows out of the cement slab being the foundation. That's the couple's relationship. One other thing I'll point out is that children know their place in the world in this. There's another advantage to that. They know they came second. Mom and dad come first. There's a built-in authority there, and there's a built-in, invitation to humility there for children. Like, the world does not revolve around you. Mom and I make the decisions, not you. That's a really important thing for child development, and spiritually, that's huge, because children who grow up thinking the world revolves around them are not so keen on embracing a God who says that's not true. You see, it is the first step towards spiritual faith development for children to know that I come second. That's all built into this structure. So what happens then after the death of a spouse, a divorce, or a dissolved relationship of a couple that's together and had children? Well, we've lost coupleness. In effect, that foundation, that cement slab, has crumbled. There's been a massive earthquake, and there's been actually, I will say, some trauma to the system. Now, sometimes as I say these things, I want to just be aware that it sort of feels heavy. It feels like, wow, you're telling me something that just makes me feel bad. I feel heavy, I feel guilty, I feel something connected to that. And it's not meant to bring that shame or guilt. It's meant to just say, let's acknowledge that the cement slab is not holding things up. And because that has gone away, there has to be some adjustment to the family. So in this little scenario, the single parent home, what happens is life tends to sort of shift. If the family was built around mom and dad as the unifiers and children and everything sort of parenting flows out of that, then now that we've removed this and we have a single parent home, it's sort of like sometimes the thing shifts a little bit. It just sort of goes like this. And it doesn't mean that that's terrible or horrible, but kids carry a little more weight in the home, and there's one kid who has to cook dinner twice a week, and mom sometimes taps the oldest child to take care of the younger siblings. That's a pretty common thing. Dad does too, right? And sometimes the single dad home, well, that's unfair. I don't want to make it dad or mom. I just think in any single parent home, there's a little bit of a shift. You have to adjust how you're going to do life. Sometimes it goes woo like that. And on occasion it goes upside down, but that's just sort of a function of how's the emotional well-being of that parent in that home and how are they maintaining their parental posture with children. That's just sort of coping. I don't want you to hear that's bad. What I want you to hear is something's got to change. There's been a tragedy. There's been a trauma. Life changes. Now, I don't have a whole lot of time to unpack this, and my personal walk in this world of tragedy and trauma comes in the form that's maybe a little different for some of you. My wife and I have three boys, and our middle son, Connor, passed away when he was 12. We are now at 13 and a half years. February will be 14. I have had my world completely demolished by the earthquake of death. And it has recalibrated me and my marriage and my family in 1,000 different ways. There's this little scene in, I don't know, Back to the Future, number 2 or 3, I don't know, where Doc gets out the whiteboard and he goes, okay, you remember, we're living in this, you know, he's Marty, we're living in this trajectory of life, and that was our reality, and life had a future to it, and you kind of know what to, and all of a sudden we took this detour, and we went down, and now we're living in this reality, and every once in a while in this reality, you can look up here at where you think you should have been right about now, and you go, oh my gosh, how did we get here? I don't want to be here. I want to be there. But he's not coming back this side of Jesus' return. And I got to live with that every day. I got to wake up every Thanksgiving, every Christmas, every birthday, every anniversary of his death. Every time I wake up and I put this little thing on my arm, it's sort of the thing I carry, so it's how I carry him. Every conversation I have about him, it is my tragedy. I'm living this reality, and I can't get back up here. And that's part of the recalibration. I see the world differently. I spend my money differently. I make decisions about what's important differently. Yesterday, I was flying from Orlando. I was in some meetings down there, and I was trying to come here, and I was supposed to get here much earlier in the day, and then delays with the weather. My wife was flying from Little Rock, where we live, to meet me here. I got here late last night. She didn't get here at all, because the storm went through here and went straight to Arkansas. She never got out of there. She's missing out on this whole experience. We're disappointed with that. And you know what she and I said to each other on the phone about all these delays? Well, what if you don't get there, Ron? What if the workshops never happen? What if? We looked at each other and we said, it's not a bad day. Because I know what a bad day is. I know what bad moments in life are. And honestly, I'm glad I'm here today. Thank you, God, for making that happen. But if I wasn't here today, I'd miss you. But it's not a bad day. It's a little thing to me now. It used to be I'd worry and be anxious about not catching a flight. And it doesn't even measure on my Richter scale anymore. Because of the tragedy and the change, it changes us. You can't help but have it change. As a parent, you're changed. You know what a bad day is, and you know what's not a bad day. And maybe that's why you don't mind the little mess on the floor, because that's not a bad day. By the way, you can see how that's a little set up for a step-parent to walk in and go, why do you not say something about this? It's not a bad day. I got some laughter out of you. You guys know what I'm... Yeah, that connected right there. Right? It's recalibrated you. By the way, if you're a step-parent who's walked into... After the tragedy and the trauma, and you have not lived your own tragedy and trauma, you may have a really hard time understanding the rubble of their earthquake and all the little aftershocks that keep coming. We're 13 and a half years out. The aftershocks have not ended. My other two boys, how they carry their brother, how it affects their heart, their faith. I mean, we're walking every day, living this. And so are you. And so life changes a little bit. So what happens then? Oh, by the way, a lot of single parents have good marketing. Great little strategy there. Got to find somebody that'll fill the gaps, right? By the way, there's a really big unrealistic expectation embedded in that. I think it's worth us just taking a second and acknowledging what that is, just in case anybody in here maybe sort of adopted that expectation. You didn't even realize it. What's the expectation? Okay, so for those that are listening to the recording, it's one of those families drawn on the back of a car windshield, and there's an X where the dad should be, and then somebody has written in open position with an arrow. Okay, so this mom is a single parent, and she's looking for somebody to fill the role of dad. And here's the expectation that this reveals. That once I marry that guy, then we will have repaired what we lost. No. You haven't created a biological family that lives by biological rules that has relationships that are all based upon DNA and togetherness and safety and security in children. What you've created is a step family that has a different set of rules. Not bad, not worse, not horrible, nothing inherently wrong to the blended family experience, but not that. And so if you, bio mom, are having the expectations for your husband to be the dad of your children, he cannot, because he's facing keep your hands off my mama, keep your hands off my Doritos. It's not the same as being dad. It's stepdad. It comes with different territory. Mom has expectations for what her husband should do. Stepdad comes in, he's got a few expectations of his own. If he's never had children before, maybe he's got this fantasy of what parenting is and what it's like, and I know how my dad parented me, and I got that in my head, and so he goes to work being that kind of guy. If he has his own biological children, he knows what dadness is. He's been doing it for 10, 12, 15, 35 years. And he comes in with a heart for, yeah, this is how you be a dad. And that's not the same role as being a stepdad. Because keep your hands off my mama is a dynamic that is unlike anything he's ever experienced anywhere. And so all of a sudden, her expectations and his expectations collide with the children's expectations. And oh, by the way, if biological dad is living in another home somewhere, I guarantee a bio dad has expectations of who the stepdad is not going to be in his children's life. How many expectations have we just collided into one moment? About six? So who's he supposed to be? You see how that complexity creates stress? Because he tries, and then somebody goes, but that's not how you're supposed to do it. And he goes, well, what do you mean? I thought I... And all of a sudden, stress thickens blood. It happens that fast. And so the expectation creates disappointment and a setup for conflict later on. When this happens, when the blended family, step family, reconstituted marriage creates a new family dynamic. Now, notice what we've got. We got the individual thing. The parent child is there. That's the new foundation of the home. That's what was carried into the family experience. And now we've added coupleness. Two little elements there. Coupleness follows children. Children came first. Keep your hands off my mama. And the step-parent is in that coupleness, little position there. And they're trying to find their way into the territory and find permission to come in and find people who are welcoming to him coming in or her coming in. And that's where a lot of this stress and complexity sort of hits home. It's like, okay, wow, that's a different dynamic. Children came first. What if bio mom sort of prefers, or bio dad prefers, that parent-child relationship? What if there's safety in that for the single parent? Safety meaning, you know, your kids are never going to reject you. Your last spouse did. But you know your kids won't. Because kids will take you back even if you're a jerk. Even if you're unrealistic and unreasonable and unreliable, they'll still want you in their life. They're easily forgiving. We'll talk about that a little bit more in the breakout this afternoon. But that's a different dynamic to then somehow shift toward a spouse. And that's, in effect, what really needs to be happening. To protect your marriage in a blended family, you got to be mindful of this positioning of where you are in and how you position one another within the family. We want to move coupleness to where God intended it to be. Very important that we say right off the bat, that little call out there, that little star, not at the expense of children. When the first edition of my book, The Smart Step Family, came out in 2002, it's hard to believe, it's been over 20 years now, I made a mistake. Oh, look at that. They got the soft cover copy. That came out in 06, so man, beautiful. I made a mistake. I didn't word this well. And some people heard, oh, reject my children, abandon my kids, stop taking care of them for the sake of my spouse. No. I don't want you to hear that. If we backed all the way up to that first slide, or the slide just previous to this, and we said, okay, God's design, individual, couple, then parents and children, we would say there are seasons of that couple's life where they are investing deeply in their children, time, energy, chasing them around the soccer field and everything else, trying to build them up and nurture them, prepare them for life. Yes, that's parenting. And your guard and protect your marriage somewhere in the middle of all that. You're hearing some teaching around that this weekend, I'm sure. That's just easier to do when your marriage came first and the kids are in support of the marriage. But if your relationship is in your marriage is competing with the kids, which is sort of what happens at that first level when the couple's relationship gets added on, you're competing against that parent-child relationship without even realizing it, then all of a sudden it's a lot harder. And so it feels like you got to make choices, my kids or my spouse. No, it's both and, your kids and your spouse. It is a process of loving both. And yet there needs to be this heart shift. There needs to be this ultimate thing where you say to one another, you and I are in this thing for life. In fact, I want to just talk about what I'm calling front seat marriage. I want to give you two very specific action points underneath front seat marriage. The first one is shift your allegiance to your spouse in your heart and let your kids know that out loud and in subtle ways with how you structure your time and your energy. Shift your allegiance. This is Genesis 2:24. And for this reason, a man will leave his father and mother and cleave to his wife, and the two will become one flesh. Leave his father and mother. Oh, so that means when you get married, you abandon your parents. You never speak to them again. When they get old, they're just on their own. Tough luck. Hope it works out for you guys. Let me know when you're dead, and then I'll go to the funeral. Well, that's absurd. We all know that that's not true. As a matter of fact, there's another commandment in the Old Testament to honor your father and mother. Leaving has nothing to do with abandoning. Leaving has nothing to do with forgetting, discounting, neglecting. It has to do with honor, but what it has to do with is allegiance. It's shifting of your heart, primary allegiance to your spouse. Cleave. You've become this new entity. There is an usness here that did not exist before the wedding. And that's a profound thing. And that ought to reorient how you do life. There is a leave and cleave that needs to happen in a single parent home who marries somebody who becomes the step parent. If you're both single parents and you marry, it happens in both directions. The leaving is not abandoning your kids, but it is a shift in allegiance. What does that look like? Point number two under front seat marriage. Let me give you some practical examples. This is sort of related to in parenting, put each other in the front seat of the car. Like, let me just explain that analogy. If somebody said, let's all go to lunch today. Somebody said, I'll drive. Great. And you said, okay, I'm riding with you. When you walked out in the parking lot, would you go grab their keys out of their pocket and hop in the driver's seat? No, you wouldn't do that. Like, it's their car, right? You wouldn't assume that position. Of course not. If their spouse was with them, you would probably defer, let their spouse sit in the front seat, and you'd hop in the back, right? Now, if the spouse said, no, you sit in the front, that's different. But you wouldn't assume you belong in the front. We all get this. When your children start driving your car, some of you have experienced that, as I have, they know it's your car, and the keys are yours, not theirs, right? Everybody knows who belongs where. They belong in the back. Imagine single-parent home. Who rides in the front with dad every time they get in the car? One of the kids. You see, they belong in the front, and they get used to that, and they enjoy that. And then along comes a step-parent who says, dude, get in the back. Whoa. You don't have the right to tell. You see how that works? See, that little analogy is how do we put each other in the front seat in marriage and in parenting? Because that means somebody has to go to the back who wants to be in the front. We have a bit of a conflict here. And it's the biological parent's job to say, sorry, buddy, get in the back. He's riding in the front. She's riding in the front. The bio parent has to be the one who elevates the status of the step parent in the territory. No. They do belong in this territory. They do get to eat the Doritos. That's the biological parent's job. So, for example, when it comes to bio parents, here's one way you put your spouse in the front seat in very practical terms. Make space for the step parent to be a part of decision making. Let's just imagine you've been a single parent for 3 years or 10 years, whatever the case is, you are on it. You're making choices. You're making decisions every single day. Kids come with a question, you got an answer. And if you make them wait, you are the one who's got to ultimately give them the answer because that's your domain. Everybody's used to that. There comes a day where you say to the kids, I don't know, I'll get back to you. And they're like, what? You never had to get back to us before. That's a moment of front seat, back seat. I'm going to go consult with, talk to, spend a little, have a little conversation with my spouse. That's a front seat moment. Kids are going, why do you have to ask him, Mom? And they'll play that. I mean, they will totally use that against you, will they not? Because it's like, oh, so he's running the show now. Mm-hmm. I can see it. He told you to tell us to say, no, we couldn't. And what are they saying? I'm more comfortable in the front. I don't like the back because it means a change for me that I'm not used to. And you know what? In the past, every doggone change brought a whole lot of pain in my life. And here's another one I didn't ask for. Unwanted change brings pain and loss. And it's not the first straw on the camel's back. It's about the 100th million for a child. What is a small thing to us is a big thing to them because it's been accumulating over time. And so for you to say, hey, I'll get back to you on that. Small thing for you, big thing for that kid, potentially. Which is why, if you ever see reactions out of your kids that, wow, this on a 10 scale of 1 to 10, this should be a 2, I'll get back to you. That's a 2. What's the? And you see a 6 or an 8 reaction out of your kid, this is, think hay. Think this is a bale of hay just piled on the back of that camel's back. Another thing they didn't ask for. Sometimes that helps you understand and make sense of those strong reactions out of children that you didn't see coming. Okay, that's what it is. Oh, backseat moment. Oh, yeah, okay. So what am I going to do? Well, I'm going to make space, I'm going to consult with, and I'm going to come back and tell my child. And by the way, you can, bioparents, set the step-parent up, elevate their status in your child's heart in that moment. If the answer is, we decided, no, you're not going to get to do what you just asked to do, then you own that no as the bioparent. You come back and say, no, we decided not to. You're just doing that because he, no. No, you know what? In the past, maybe I did let you do some of that, and now I'm changing because, yes, we talked. You're a smart kid. You figured out. We had a conversation. You're right. He is influencing my parenting, and that's because he's my partner and marriage partner in life, and we are going to make decisions together from this point forward, but I want you to be very clear. I want you to understand. He didn't make this decision. We did. We did. And I back it. Sorry, you're not going. That is a massive front seat moment. How do you nurture the heart of the child who in that moment is being relegated to the back seat? Wrap that little no with a, I love you. This is so hard. I'm so sorry. We just heard Ted Lowe talking about empathy. That is the empathy compassion moment. Oh, gosh. Here's another thing you didn't ask for. I'm sorry. I get it. I see this hurt in your heart. I understand. I am sorry. I realize this is another thing. I'm sorry. You're still not going. That little combination of compassion, empathy, and boundary setting, being parental, is a powerful shift that is taking the family that maybe was here and putting it back like that and adding, bringing in the front seat step parent who needs to be a part of the foundation of the home. By the way, bioparents, the other side of this is don't undercut the step parent. Like you have a vulnerable moment. Oh, you know what? He and I talked about it and he thinks you shouldn't be able to go. And I don't know. I think you can go, but he said no. So no, you can't. That's a huge undercut of the step-parent. They're already on the outside. You just threw them behind, under the car. Put your child in the front seat, put your spouse in the, under the car, you just drove over them. Those moments matter. You as the bioparent own those decisions. Now, here's a little illustration I would give you for step-parents. Here's what you can do that's a front seat thing. Do not make unilateral decisions. Unilateral, meaning on your own. You know what? I don't like the way you do X. I'm changing that rule. As a step-parent, early on in the blended family experience, this is a timing thing. You can get to the place where you can make those unilateral decisions, but it's a matter of earning your keep, earning your position within the home. Don't play all your chips in one moment. Because not only do you set up the bio parent to look bad, But you set yourself up for the whole thing to ripple back against you, because here's what happens. You say to the kid, you know what? Your dad's been able to, he's been letting you do this forever, but I'm saying, nope, you got it. You can't do that anymore. What is the kid going to do? Who are they going to run to? Dad, their savior, right? He's their core. He's their safety mechanism. When chips are down and we all get stressed in life, this is true of in the pandemic. When you got stressed, what do we do? We pull back into the people we know and trust the most. As a matter of fact, 2 years ago, March of 2020, when that happened, go home, hang out with the people you know and trust the most. It is a sociological as well as an emotional mechanism that is true for all situations. When a kid gets stressed, they're going to pull into the thing they know and trust the most. That, in this case, is my dad, my biological parent. Dad, she said, I couldn't go, blah, 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 blah. She's telling you what to do. Blah, blah, blah. Are you going to let her tell me? And now the kid is playing dad, playing on dad's heartstrings. Now dad is in this really awkward position of trying to figure out the lay of the land and the territory. And no matter what they do, it feels like somebody's going to be upset. So if they sort of speak on behalf of the child, doesn't mean they're taking the child's side. But it sure feels that way to the step-parent once they come to you and say, hey, Johnny told me you did. It feels like you just took the kid's side and you're not on my side. And now I feel like I'm stuck. I'm outside. You're not supporting me. You love your kids more than you love me. And that is a marriage problem. So step-parent, you threw yourself under the car by making a unilateral decision without spending time in unity, developing unity, I should say, with your spouse. You notice unity is a real big thing here? Because the parenting stuff is also always about your marriage because of this competition dynamic that's sort of under the surface. And so if you are really careful to check in with one another, get on the same page, you're putting yourselves, your usness, in the front seat. And it is so very important. Quick little case study. I think we're going to have a few minutes for some Q&A here in just a minute. We'll open it up, see if you have any thoughts or questions. So I worked with this couple long ago, far away. This is a true story. This is actually in the Smart Step Family, the revised edition, I believe. I'm not sure it's in your edition. This is a true story. A husband and wife were having some difficulty. He had brought two children to the marriage. He married a woman who didn't have any children, and they were in the middle of a conflict one day, and he said, don't come between me and my children. They can't get another father, but you can always get another husband. Yeah. Back there, she's going, oh, right. Okay, let's talk. This is where you talk back to me, okay? What are his priorities? Let me read it again. Don't come between me and my children. They can't get another father, but you can always get another husband. What would you say his priorities are? Talk to me. The children. Who did he just put in the front seat? Who did he just put in the back seat? Who did he put in the trunk? His wife. Who's he dragging behind the car as they barrel down the freeway? Wow. Okay, pretty obvious. Question number two. What might his wife feel? Now, every one of us, because of the roles that we play, so I have a husband heart and I have a dad heart. Right? Some of you have a wife heart, a mom heart, and a stepmom heart. Okay, let's just think about those little slivers of us for a second. Let's talk about her wife heart. How's this going to impact her relationship with her husband? Ladies, talk to me. Say again. She doesn't feel like a priority. By the way, what sort of feeling does that engender in a woman when she doesn't feel important? Hurt, neglect. Do what?
Anger.
Fear.
Resentment.
Unloved. Okay, unloved. Unloved, resentment, anger, fear. What did I miss?
Hurt.
Wow. Now, those are the emotions that warm up a woman's sexual drive. She's going to want to have sex right after this. No, that's not the way it works. You see how these moments are tied? This is not just about parenting. This is about their sex life. It's about their bank account. Because if I feel hurt, unloved, unwanted, resentful, angry, Do I want to share all that I am and all that I have with you? Nope. I'm looking for ways to pull back. Blending or withdrawing? This is a withdrawal mechanism. And it affects everything. Okay, so obviously, this is not helping their usness, their marital usness. It's not improving her wife heart, making it easier for her to trust and move toward her husband. There's no safety there. So we tend to move away when things are not safe. How about the next question? How might this affect her relationship with the children? So we're sort of asking about her stepmom heart. How might this impact them? Somebody said resentment. Who said resentment a minute ago about the wife part? How would that show up as a dynamic in her stepmom heart?
She feels like an outsider.
Jealous of who? When you're an outsider and the territory is clearly defined and you're on the outside and your whole agenda in getting married to this guy is to move in, be a part of the family, help the family feel like they're a part of the family, right? Create familyness. But now you keep finding yourself on the outside and it creates a jealousy of the people on the inside. We're back to something Lori said just a minute ago. Jealousy is the fear of being replaced. In a relational dynamic, it's the fear of being replaced. So think about it. I'm out here, they're in there. I've been replaced by them. How do I get in? I don't know what my chances are. Where's my posture, my place? I don't know what to do. It spins in all sorts of directions. So resentment toward the kids. Fear about not being important or brought into the fold. What else? How else might this affect her stepmom heart? So the kids that you're jealous of sort of become the enemy, right? Moving toward them doesn't really make sense. I mean, because I know the children are not going to pick up on this whole dynamic. They're not going to notice, right? Kids don't have any awareness at all that the stepmom is put on the outside. Oh, that's funny. Come on, you guys. You do know they're going to know. I don't care if they're two. They know. They feel it. But they wouldn't abuse that power, would they? Kids don't do that. No. Not in Dallas. Maybe somewhere else. At least one child will, if not all the above. Because it's evident. You see, Dad has made it clear. I worked talking with a guy one time, and he said, yeah, I had a stepfather growing up. I said, oh, yeah? He said, yeah, he was great. My mom and dad divorced when I was like 4, and then when I was 5 or 6, he came into my life, and this is what he said. I loved him. He's great. I called him Dad from pretty early on, and that's kind of rare, and so he just did, and he said, you know, it was great. It was good, and I said, oh, that's wonderful, and then he gave me whiplash because the next thing he said was, but I never respected him. He loved him, called him Dad, thought it was wonderful, but never respected him as an authority figure in your life. I said, whoa, unpack that for me. Why? And he said, well, Mom came to us at one point and just said, hey, look, if he ever does anything that I really don't like and he hurts you guys, I'll take you and we'll leave him. Who's in the front seat? Who's being drugged behind the car? And who knows it? So they don't have to respect the people who get drugged behind the back of the car. It affects authority. It affects discipline. It rolls into everything that happens within the family in that space. It's the same thing that's happening to this stepmom here. That's not a front seat moment. Now, if we paused right now and I said, all right, tell me about this guy who says, don't come between me and my kids, what do you think of this guy? At this point in time, you might come up with some 4-letter words. Jerk. That's what I was thinking of. I don't know what you were thinking of, but you might not be complimentary towards this guy at this point, which is why we must put on empathy and ask the last question. What fears are embedded in this man's statement? Well, Ron, he's just a jerk. I don't know what's behind it. It doesn't really matter. He's a jerk. No. It does matter what's behind it. He needs to understand his own fears. His wife needs to understand those fears. Because if neither one of them can respond to what's underneath all of this, it'll just dominate their life. So what might be behind this? Talk to me. Fear of losing relationship with the kids. Who knows what the story is?
Maybe they'll go to mom's house. Maybe mom's just waiting with bated breath for one more negative thing so she can call her attorney. Maybe that's hanging out in that past. Or maybe there's just that he's got a teenager who's really been spending more time at mom's house because she has, you know, cool stuff and video games and lets the kids stay up to all hours of the night. So he knows he's sort of competing against her parenting and how lax she is. And that is a factor that's looming in the back of his mind. And so he feels like it's just one more negative thing. I'm going to lose this kid. Who knows what's behind all that? But it makes sense. What else might he be feeling or afraid of?
Rejection as a spouse.
Rejection as a spouse. See, she just sort of tied it all together very nicely. It's not just about his kids. Maybe it's, okay, if I lean into you and put you in the front seat and it comes at a cost with my children, they get hurt, they get upset. I'm not willing to pay that price, so you have to sit in the back. And besides, how do I know once you get up here in the front seat that you're really going to stick around forever? Because in my first marriage, the pastor said, marriage is till death do us part. And then it wasn't. So how do I know that I know that I know that you are trustworthy? This is where that little thing from the past, we like to call it the ghost of marriage past, you know, that little thing that sits on your shoulder that goes, okay, don't trust anybody. My goodness, you know what it cost you last time? Really? You're going to go there? Are you serious? That's dumb. And it's just this faint little voice that just sort of invades moments of, okay, what do I do? And if you notice that in your own heart, in your own mind, that is a prayerful moment. Lord God, help me find the courage to shift my allegiance to my spouse. Leave and cleave. Because if I don't, I'm constantly going to be shipping them to the back of the car and behind the car. I got to take the chance that love and trust will develop something over time. Now, I just want to real quickly add this little addendum. In the beginning of a blended family, it's very common for this love and trust front seat moment stuff to not have an immediate payoff. What you get is craziness from a child or a couple of kids, or that feeling like I'm losing. Even I put you in the front seat and it still didn't work out that great. You still didn't come through, and now they're upset with me, and my ex is saying, kids, come over here. And it feels like you lose over and over and over. I just want to say that is a demonic attack on you trying to right the ship and get it back where the couple is the foundation for the family. See it for what it is. Recognize it. By the way, step parent, it's really helpful if you can have heart and compassion and love and a whole lot of mercy for your spouse who finds himself struggling between all of these tensions. If you can be their partner in this, it makes it a whole lot easier to trust you. But if you're over here going, Francie, finally you put me in the front. You know, the last six times you didn't do anything, did you? You're making it really hard for them to like you. And that kid of yours, he just won't get out of bed. Can you get him out of bed? I mean, we're all late in the morning. It makes it really hard. So be their partner. Be their friend. Come alongside him and go, oh, wow, that was a huge moment. I just saw you put me in the front, and I know how hard that is. I know the cost. I know the risk. Wow, I love you. I'm sorry. Your kid's blowing up. Okay, let's talk. I mean, that's at least saying I'm with you in this. Those moments really, really matter. At the end of the day, you're protecting and guarding your marriage. I got a little video series called The Smart Step Family, and we've got a little episode where we talk about this stepdad who had a hard time wrestling with one of his stepdaughter, and this is what happened. Let me just show you that.
Kevin and I, probably about a year after we met, got married, and so of course I brought a child into the relationship, and she was just turning 12, and that brought with it its own set of challenges.
When my mom and Kevin first got together, I really kind of didn't know how to feel. It was kind of new for me, and so I was not receptive. There was a lot of pushback.
We wouldn't eat at the same table. She would take her food upstairs. We're very seldom riding the same car. Going through that phase of it, of the tension, that was probably some of the dark times for me.
They didn't even ride in the same car. No issue about who rides in the front. They weren't even getting the same car, right? Look at the separateness there and the difficulty that's related to that. Okay, let's keep going.
There were just lots of very tense moments where it just did not seem like it was working. Lots of times with him in the garage, kind of working out his frustrations. Lots of times with her telling him, "You're not my daddy." And me kind of caught in between and, you know, trying to get both of them to kind of come together.
So there was a time when I was having some extreme health issues, and I noticed that a lot of the people that I called my core friends were not, you know, there for me, were not able to come through, to the point where I was isolated and didn't have anybody but my mom and Kevin, you know, were there for me. They dropped everything regardless of our background, our history.
It was like God had dropped a ton of bricks over my head and said, wake up, regardless of how she acts, you still show love, show that you care. Show that you're gonna be here regardless.
She realized, oh, they are gonna always be here for me. And I could kind of see the change in her.
For 3 or 4 years, I'm starting to see like the growth and the connectivity of our family, our unit, right? And so I'm loving this. And so I still felt like something was missing. And so talking to God and praying about it, I actually called my mom one day and I was like, Mom, I have an idea. I'm gonna ask Kevin to adopt me.
I knew nothing about it. I thought we were going over to shoot a video about blended family. And little did I know that I would be asked to adopt. Of course, I would say yes in a heartbeat. I was just overjoyed.
God taught me how he views us. We're ugly, we're broken, we're all different shapes and pieces, but look what God can do with anything, because our family was a mess. But look what he's done and look what he's doing with us. He can make something out of anything.
It took close to 18, 19 years for this thing to come full circle. It was truly God working in her life. Just the fact that we're all together.
Okay, so adopting, having a child that asks you to adopt them is not the goal. Relationship is the goal. That is rarely an outcome, but an example of the kind of thing that can happen. But the point is, he led with love. He continued the course. They kept working on this thing, steadily chipping away at it, putting each other in the front seat. And eventually it created a little bit of a change and a heart change in her. Everybody get your phones out. I want to give you a couple of resources that I want for you to know about. If you don't know about it, we have a podcast called the Family Life Blended Podcast every other week, where we just recorded number 104. So you got some catching up to do if you've never listened to this. We dive in to all sorts of specific issues related to blended families, post-death, post-divorce, kids, adults, step-parenting, you name it. That's an ongoing conversation for us. Look us up on your favorite podcast app. We've got a bunch of resources, all right? That video series in the top right, that's the one I just showed you a little clip from. That is actually free. If you go to that web address, it's on Right Now Media, but you have to go to this address to have free access to it if your church does not happen to subscribe. Does Watermark subscribe? Okay, well then fine. You can just go get it and watch it, that whole series if you want. But even better for you to do this with some other people. So check it out. I want you to know this is what's happening at Watermark. Coming up November 14th, East Tower 2A. Kirk and Lori right here are going to be leading a group through Preparing to Blend, which is our premarital guide for couples who are planning to get married. If you know anybody dating, seriously engaged or something along those lines, this is a good series that's designed for them, as well as this is what's coming up for you at your church, a series of things, Preparing to Blend. Then there's a blended family equipping class that'll meet in January. They're going to be studying the Smart Step Family marriage, and then a social gathering, and then next fall, they're going to be working through my other book, The Smart Step Family. So I just want you to know it's beginning to happen here at Watermark, increasingly, and you just need to keep asking leaders to do this sort of stuff on your behalf, and I think that'll make a real difference. This is where I live. If you want to come see us and follow what we're doing, you can come check us out at these particular websites, and feel free to follow. We'd love to have you do that on social media. Every day we're putting something out to try to encourage people. I know we're out of time. It's 12:01, and so just so you know, I'm going to hang around for a couple of minutes. Then, like you, I'm going to try to go get lunch, and I'll be back in this room. I think we just have an hour. They shorten lunch a little bit, so we start at 1 o'clock in the next breakout if you're interested in that one. We're going to do a little bit diving, drilling down into parenting and step-parenting and how you build that unity within yourselves as a couple, okay? Let me pray over you. Lord God, I thank you for the morning and the time together, and I just pray a blessing on all these couples that are here and upon the leadership at Watermark as they try to pour into blended family couples in this community, in this city. Lord, we thank you for your grace and your mercy and for being a God of hope who brings and strengthens and brings wisdom when we ask. We are asking for it. So we pray that for them as they go, and now for this meal. We thank you. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.